week's Punk News Podcast. My name is Chris Moran. I'll be your host and moderator for this week's roundtable discussion. I'll be joined in just a bit by Brian Yancey and John Gentile, and we'll be mindlessly talking about all kinds of shit. So, yeah, stick around in a few minutes. They will be on here and make this thing happen. Now we're going to go ahead and actually play a brand new song for you. This one actually comes from the United Kingdom Snuff, and for those of you who've never heard of Snuff, they're one of the more long-running bands on the Fat Records label. Anybody who grew up listening to the Fat compilations, you know, there's tons of them. I'm not going to try to name them all, but the Snuff songs were always ones that were, you know, one of the more quirky songs on each of those compilations. Kind of how I actually got into the band and have always really enjoyed their music. Unfortunately, never got to see them live, but maybe with you know, this new record, that'll change. They actually just released a brand new record. That record is called 54321, perhaps, and it was out. Actually, came out on January 8th, so it's available now. You can pick that thing up at the Fat Records website. Or anywhere you can get music mostly. So, yeah, check it out. But I'm going to go ahead and actually play a song from it for you right now. This song is called Rat Run. And again, this is from Snuff's new record, 54321, perhaps.
Underneath the bush, ran past the bits and ran back again. A few rotten shenanigans, I can't imagine the pigeons and a little bit of fear.
Welcome to the Punk News Podcast Roundtable. Again, my name's Chris Moran. I am your host, coming to you straight out of Richmond, Virginia. And joining me, not one, but two of our fellow Punk News staff editorial members from Pennsylvania. First, we have Brian Yancey, and Brian's coming to us from Philly. Welcome, Brian.
Hey, hey, hey.
And John Gentile is coming to us from Something Mills. So, John.
Glenn Mills, PA, baby. Right, I'm about 20 minutes from Brian Yancey.
That's correct.
Wow, I feel like you guys are ganging up on me.
No, it's, you know, it's okay.
Just don't invade my city, or we'll have to flee.
I don't think we're gonna have to worry about that too much.
You guys know the story behind that, right?
What?
No.
When the Union Army invaded Richmond, Jefferson Davis fled in drag.
How far did he get?
To like
third base.
He got to Petersburg because that's where they retreated to. But like, you know, he was eventually like arrested and shit. But yeah, it's pretty funny. We take pride in that.
I can't imagine the cross dressing technology back in those days was very advanced. But you know, I feel like these days it might be a little bit easier to get away with that than it was back then.
He probably still did like you know the tape behind maneuver. You know. So.
Well, there is this one infamous section that has nothing but transsexual prostitutes. So, yeah, we've already sort of worked on our technique.
Interesting. How much time do you spend there?
It's more about how much money do I spend there.
I guess that's true. I guess that's true. Okay. I'm not judging. I'm just asking.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of some, no, I'm not even going to make that segue. I'm just going to go into it. Let's talk about Max Bemis. So you guys know Max Bemis in his uber popular outfit Say Anything. He's apparently going to be releasing a comic book series coming through Boom Studios. It's going to be called Polarity, which apparently will feature a protagonist by the name of Timothy Woods, who suffers from bipolar disorder and for whom medication is repressing his superpowers. So the book's going to come out in April, and then each issue is going to apparently have a download code for an original song from Bemis. He's still fucking plugging those original songs.
Here's what
Max said about it. He said, it's a dark comedy about a man with bipolar disorder who develops superpowers as he descends into his mania. Kind of like bipolar Spider-Man, but with more pop culture references. We all know, you know, Max has struggled with bipolar disorder for some time. It's well documented. He's very vocal about it. I've got to choose my words carefully here with my commentary on this. So I'm gonna pass. What do you think about this whole idea? I mean, it's
interesting. I mean, on one hand, his fans. And who, even after all these years, are still pretty rabid, as far as I can tell. They sort of eat up and consume pretty much any project that he's involved in. He's involved in a lot of projects these days, not just Say Anything, but, you know, he's got his song shop, he's got other bands, he's got, you know, a record label, he's got all these other things going on that are kind of part of his brand, for lack of a better term. And I don't know, it's fine. Like, you know, The three of us on this panel here tonight obviously aren't necessarily part of the audience, the targeted audience for this particular piece of literature. But I don't know. I mean,
yeah, you know, I gotta say, I think most listeners know. For a little while, there's a little bit of a battle going on between Matt Bemis and Punk News. You know, shots were being fired.
Wait! Did you just call him Matt Bemis?
No, Max Bemis.
Okay, I'm just making sure, because that would have been hilarious.
Whenever he says Max Bemis, honestly, I think of Beavis and Butthead. But like for a little while, there's a battle going on, and then after a while, I got to say, Max Bemis kind of manned up, and then he was like, you know, I mean, I'm a different person now. We both said things that were kind of stupid. I don't want to fight anymore. He said that more or less, and so I kind of give him more respect these days. I'm really not into his music, and I think this comic book will probably be kind of cheesy, but I got to say, man, I mean, like – I can't diss Matt Bemis for doing this because you guys know I'm always propping the Melvins, and this is the same kind of thing the Melvins do. The Melvins put out a lot of music. They put out a lot of products in order to keep making music so they don't have to get day jobs, you know? And so I'm not into the music, but if he wants to put out a comic book and that's how he wants to express himself and he wants to include a song with it, which I think is cool, then I guess more power to him. I'm not going to diss him because of this. I mean, I don't think his music's good, but it's not aimed at me. I mean, it ain't aimed at – dude's going to Melvin's concerts, Max Bemis is James, you know? And so I got to say, I hope he's successful because if he's successful, that means better bands will be able to keep afloat more and keep putting out music that I want to hear. You know,
right, John,
that's a good point. I just can't believe how soon you were able to bring up the Melvins in this show.
I honestly I'm probably gonna quit doing that because I'm becoming a cliche of myself. But it is true. The Melvins are the forerunners of, I guess, cross platform products that relate back to the Melvins, and it's not just like a Kiss like Kiss bowling pin. What does that have to do with Kiss? You know, whereas like the Melvins put out a lot of different things, but they're all sort of revolving around the Melvins music and that kind of a thing.
John, it's very rare that I would dare challenge you, but I'm going to have to challenge you here because you're making what sounds like a very loose argument in support of quantity over quality. And just because Max Bemis puts out a bunch of shit doesn't mean that he should continue pimping anything that he thinks is viable.
Yeah, but I mean, it's shit to you and me, but it's not shit to him and his fan base. Like, if this is what they like, this is what they like. I mean, honestly, like, who's at a Max Bemis concert? I'm not trying to be a jerk, but like 16-year-old girls? Is that who's at a Say Anything concert?
Yeah.
Yeah, right, probably. I mean, they're not going to be. They're not, if I play like the Melvins, I'm like, "Yo, girls, check out the Bullhead album." They're not going to be like, "This is great." They're going to be like, "This is shit." It's one note for 8 minutes.
Yes,
and I'll be like, "Oh, I can't really defend that because it's true." So, I mean, like, like Max Bemis. I mean, I don't know anything about his music, but I'm assuming that the songs that are coming with the comic book and the comic book itself will be as good as the other product that he puts out that his fans like. So I'm not going to diss anybody for making an artistic dare, that's for sure. And I hope he's successful because maybe I'll get some Melvin's comic books. But on a side note, is a little while ago, about 10 years ago, Public Enemy put out comic books, but they actually sort of didn't. A rapper, I think his name was like Bull, not the current Bulldog, but another guy called Bulldog or something, put it like basically he licensed Public Enemy to put out a comic book, and it was terrible. Like, it was like Public Enemy as superheroes fighting, like, bank robbers. It was really bad, so.
But, I mean, it's still Public Enemy, and Public Enemy's good. I don't know, man. I mean, just because he has a good audience doesn't mean that it's not shit. I mean, how many of those kids are really going to be rocking Max Bemis in 2 years?
Matt,
I mean,
Bemis.
It's like he's going to be like another one of those revolving doors. Melvins, you know, even Kiss for that matter. I mean, I don't necessarily like the fact that Kiss will put their name on anything, but at least there's a lineage there, and I don't see that sustainability with Max Bemis whatsoever. And this whole back to the idea of the comic book. I mean, I get what he's going for here. Yes, he has bipolar disorder, and many others do. And yes, it's unfortunate that people have to suffer through that. But I mean, really, you're gonna try to. It's. I'll put it this way: somebody in the comics put in the comments left a statement that kind of really kind of hit what I was thinking about with this. It was Dave Brave 4, and he said, "Because people with bipolar disorder need even more reasons to not take their pills. Now they think they're going to get superpowers." I mean, that kind of, and I'm not trying to make light of anybody with the disorder, but I don't know. It's sending the wrong message to me personally. But whatever, people like it, fine. Just, you know, don't try to make a life imitate art, or I won't even say art. Don't make life imitate fart.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly an opinion that could be had.
One of many opinions.
One of many opinions. Speaking of things that were big in 2004, the newly relaunched MySpace has already run into some legal troubles. I don't know if you guys saw this. I assume you did because you're on the show, but I'm talking to the listeners. So apparently, according to the New York Times, which is the official paper of record, in case you forgot, MySpace is using music from hundreds of indie labels without their permission. Whoops. So apparently until a year ago, the site had a blanket license to stream music from these labels via Merlin Network, which I assume was named after the fictional wizard of the same name. That agreement expired, but MySpace is still streaming the music from the labels despite having no right to. MySpace's side of the story is that, according to the New York Times story, they say that the songs were uploaded by individual users and not MySpace itself, so they're not completely liable, and that they'll take them down if the labels ask them to. It's already kind of messy, and like this site has only just launched with the new Justin Timberlake single. So this is already bad news for a social network that was kind of on the fritz to begin with, on life support, however you want to phrase it. So I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see what happens with this, but it's another blow for a website that's had a bunch of different chances to come back and kind of revitalize itself, but has never seemed to kind of get the kinks worked out beforehand.
Yeah, you know, I could be wrong, but I mean, MySpace might have expected this. A lot of times when companies launch or relaunch, or a lot of times when companies become public, is they expect there's going to be a lawsuit or several lawsuits, so they put an amount of money really? Aside. Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, when Facebook went public, they got sued immediately. Certainly, Facebook knew they were going to get sued as soon as they go public. It's a cost of doing business. I don't know if MySpace budgeted for that. But I actually want to talk about this for a minute, if you guys don't mind. There's a couple factors at play.
Yeah, of course.
With regards to music, is whoever holds the rights to a song in the United States is the author, unless he sells it to somebody else. That means nobody else can publicly perform, distribute, or play that song. So if I record a song, nobody can play that song, the sound recording, except for me. How do radios play songs then? Here's the answer, is people that write songs often join ASCAP or BMI or different, I guess they call them cooperatives, in order to say, like ASCAP will say, okay, if you join us, then we'll monitor the radio stations and we'll pay you a certain amount of money for each time that you get played. So NOFX probably isn't getting anything, but Celine Dion is probably getting, you know, 100 million, well, not 100 million, but a couple million per year because her songs are being played on the radio. But that's only for analog radio, not streaming or digital radio. So for digital radio, we have a whole bunch of much smaller collectives. One of these collectives likely is Merlin Network. What Merlin Network does is they contact a whole bunch of smaller and major labels and they say, listen, if we keep track of what songs are being played by such and such website, will you grant us the rights to let those websites play those music? And in which case, we'll give you 60% of the income that we get from that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So what that was probably the old MySpace. But now that the new MySpace is relaunched, somebody is saying that the licensing agreement they had with Merlin Network, who therefore had agreements with smaller record labels to let them play their music on different websites, is now no longer active. That very well may be true. However, MySpace has a completely different argument that has nothing to do with the licensing at all. So it seems like there's contrasting evidence on either side. What happens is, with the Digital Rights Millennium Act, which was enacted, I think, in 1998, which was basically an attempt by the U.S. Congress to bring copyright law into, I guess, to fit in with the digital age. What there is there with internet service providers, which is generally a website where users can upload stuff, there's what's called a safe harbor. YouTube uses this like crazy. So does Google Music, so does Vimeo. Here's how it works, is if people are able to add contact to an internet service provider, such as YouTube, if individual users, not the company, upload copyrighted stuff to the website without the permission of the copyright holder can request to the website to take it down. The website then emails the person that uploaded it and said, we got a request to take it down. Are they correct in saying it should be taken down? If you say yes, they take it down, that's the end of the story, and then you can get sued from the copyright holder. Alternatively, if you say, no, that's my copyright, then the internet service provider has to keep it up there. And then the two parties, the copyright holder and the person that uploaded it, can sue each other. That way YouTube can't get sued. What MySpace is saying is, here's, we didn't upload any of this music. We're not borrowing this music. We're not licensing this music from anybody. Individual users put this up on our website. We had nothing to do with it. If you want to take us down, you have to send us a notice under the Digital Copyrights Millennium Act. So it has nothing to do with the Merlin license. So if you want more information on this, you can Google my SST article I wrote on the Punk News website where I discuss this about SST records. FYI.
That's a lot of information to process. It's an interesting argument. I mean, you're right. It does seem like there are kind of contrasting pieces of evidence on each side, and it doesn't really seem like that this story is done being told. It seems like there's going to be more that's going to come out, whether it's in favor of MySpace or whether it's in favor of Merlin or whether it's, you know, just more of the same or whatever it might be. But I don't know. Despite what happens, it's kind of a bad PR.
Sure.
It's kind of bad PR for MySpace, regardless of what happens, which is unfortunate for them. But yeah.
You're so nice, Brian.
Am I? I don't know. Sometimes I don't feel like I am.
No, you were that was very nice of you to be concerned about them.
I mean, I wouldn't say I'm concerned. I just, you know.
Oh, wait a minute. Maybe I'm confused. That's right. It wasn't them you were affiliated with. I remember now. Okay.
No, I used to work for MySpace.
Did you? Okay. I couldn't remember if it was them or AOL. I was like, maybe it was AOL you worked for.
Yeah, I freelanced for MySpace, and they treated me very well, for the record.
Oh, okay.
But, well, speaking of people not being treated well, Pussy Riot, the documentary, has been bought by HBO. Crazy. It was quick.
Wow.
It was quick. What happened is, let's see here. There's a documentary called Pussy Riot, A Punk Prayer that was directed and produced by Mike Lerner and Maxim Pozdorovokin. And they said that they basically have told the story of Pussy Riot, and HBO is going to be showing it, which is probably one of the largest venues where an extended explanation of Pussy Riot, the whole Pussy Riot saga, is being broadcast to a lot of people. I mean, I don't know. I think it's cool, you know?
I'm down with HBO, man. HBO does good shit. You know, they'll have a stinker every now and then, but their documentaries are usually well done, good original programming. If any of you guys saw the Paradise Lost documentaries from HBO, those were phenomenal, and I could see something in a very, like, similar vein being done with this.
Hey, actually, yeah, there's a lot of parallels to that. Go ahead, Yancey. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, that's all I had to say. I just had to say, you're right, Chris. Wow, you're right.
Boom.
I mean, man, it's almost like we're recording this in the same room where we can see each other talk. Yeah, I mean, I agree with Chris. I think HBO is a good venue for this. It's, you know, obviously they're a premium cable network, which means, you know, nothing is necessarily censored or, you know, messed with. There's no real creative control necessarily. You know, there's no ad buyers to be beholden to. There's only subscribers, so it works better than, you know, obviously if like some cable channel had picked it up, some basic cable channel. You know, so I'm really interested to see it. I mean, obviously we've been following the story pretty closely on Punk News, pretty much ever since it broke, largely thanks to our pal Andy Waterfield, who does such a good job on his continuous updates on the Pussy Riot saga, and obviously we'll continue to do so. And yeah, I think this is going to be really, really interesting to watch, and hopefully it sheds some more much needed light on what's going on over there and what happened to them, and, you know, why it's not right what happened to them, you know. So for sure. And silence. All right, so I think I'm going to play a song now. Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, yeah, man. Go ahead and play a song.
All right, so I've got a song. This is from a band called The Ambulers. They're kind of based half in Philly, half in D.C. I think more so in Philly these days, but we'll just call them an East Coast band for the sake of this argument. Their new record is Dreamers Asleep at the Wheel. It came out late last year on Salinas Records, and it's also up for Name Your Price download on ifyoumakeit.com. The name of this song is Hiding Out, and it's my favorite song on the record. It's track 3, if you're following along at home. And the band plays kind of a mix of like pop punk that's kind of a little darker, and but they have like nice harmonies. There's like a male and female vocalist that sing together, and it's kind of a mix of like everything from the 90s that I really liked, which is like Lookout Records pop punk and like weird major label post grunge, like stuff like the Breeders and things like that probably shouldn't have gotten as wide a release as they did. And it's a nice mix of that, and it's definitely worth throwing them a couple bucks if you don't want to. Obviously, you can download it for free, but you should. So this is the Ambulers, and the song is called Hiding Out.
Hiding out in a haunted house is paralyzing your tongue and mouth, and it's stopping your hand from reaching out.
Podcast again, Chris Moran here, Brian Yancey, and John Gentile, and we're going to talk about some more shit here. So, yeah, we just finished the song up from Brian, and let's go ahead and actually, guys, if you don't mind, let's go ahead and talk about this recent brawl that broke out at one of Aggression's shows, which, you know, we haven't heard a lot about violence in venues lately. So this is this actually was picked up by NBC and the Daily Breeze. There was an unrelated shooting and stabbing that took place during an Aggression show in Torrance, California. The reports were somewhat vague, but a brawl led to the two incidents, which police are treating as involving separate subjects and unrelated. Shooting victim was unfortunately killed, but the stabbing victim is in the hospital under stable condition. They haven't made any arrests yet, but apparently the police are also saying that the descriptions have been somewhat vague. Yeah, so unfortunately violence is kind of making its way back, which is, you know, it's usually an East Coast thing. So I guess the Cali kids are bringing back some of that 80s spirit of acting like idiots at shows. I don't know. What do you guys think about this, John?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I don't necessarily agree that violence is coming back to hardcore. I mean, I think, you know, news is widely disseminated now. I mean, there's fights at bars every night of the week. You know, so I mean, I think that a band called Aggression or a hardcore band. It's not even, I mean, Aggression isn't even really a hardcore band. They're more of a skate punk band. They're one of the Nardcore bands, which is the bands from Oxnard, guys like Ill Repute, MIA, Dr. No, those kind. So, I mean, it's not that fierce. I mean, I think it's sad that somebody got hurt, but I don't think it's indicative of any larger thing. But I guess I would point out, and this does blow my mind, is in California, both in Northern and Southern California, there still are like punk gangs. Yeah, I don't even know, like, to me, a gang has to be an association of people that like sell drugs and or like sell guns or like racketeer. But there's a lot of punk gangs that are just guys that like wear the same logo, leather jacket, and like hang out with each other and like fire. I mean, that's not a gang to me. That's just like a group of friends, you know. But I mean,
what's the difference between a gang and a crew?
I don't. I mean, a crew is just a bunch of meatheads that like wear the same jacket and beat people up. Yeah, that's, I mean, that's the difference. Is if you're not selling drugs and you're not selling guns, then you're not a gang. You know, and a lot of these punk gangs, they think they're like real tough. If they ever met like real gangs, I think they'd be in for quite a different attitude change. My point is I'm not really going anywhere with this. All I'm just saying is, I mean, it's unfortunate. I hope they catch the guy that shot somebody else, but I don't think this is indicative of anything larger than it's one thing.
Yeah, I don't either. It's John sort of hit the nail on the head, I should say. It's just with all the unfortunate, you know, shootings and like deaths that have happened recently that are seemingly without explanation. It's something that the media, which again, like, you know, news is everywhere these days. Everybody's on Twitter. You know, they get the news there. They're getting their news on Facebook, whatever it might be. You know, this stuff. You know, it gets people's attention, and that's kind of the crux of why we're talking about it right now. Is that yes, it happened at a punk show, but it's not something that typically happens at punk shows. I mean, I've never been to a punk show in California or anywhere in California for that matter, but I've also never really felt unsafe at one of those places at any show I've ever been to. So
yeah, I'm go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, keep going. That's fine.
Yeah, I actually got two things to point up. Is I went to I'm going to throw up my own punk cred. I saw Integrity on Friday. It was pretty cool. And Integrity, you know, is a pretty rough and tough band, and the opening bands were, you know, pretty rough and tough bands. And the crowd actually was like pretty chill. Like there wasn't like any fight. Honestly, I see more fights at like Dave Matthews than I saw at Integrity. And Integrity is like one of those Cleveland beat down hardcore bands, sort of. Although they're not quite. I mean, they're not quite like, you know, like a NYHC or a Ringworm, but I mean, they're kind of darker. But I mean, you know, they're like tough dudes, and it really was like a pretty peaceful, a really peaceful atmosphere. I didn't see any negative energy from anybody at all, to tell you the truth. And I didn't even see any drunk people or anything like that. But what I was going to say is, you guys can. I don't understand like what a punk crew is. You know, there's like punk crews in New York and in like Oakland, California, and down in LA. Like, do they have like clubhouses and like what what makes a punk crew? Like, I'm serious. Like, do they have like a place where they all meet up on Wednesday night at 9 o'clock? Or like, what is a punk crew? How do you get into a punk crew? And what do you do in a punk crew?
Well, I had this explained to me once because I wondered the same thing. And there was a time when I was actually
were you in a punk crew?
No, I was targeted by.
What was your punk crew name, Chris? Were you like were you like Stomper, Clomper?
Romper, Stomper, Chomper? No, a lot of it, and I'm in no way stereotyping here, but a lot of the crews, they are some of the more, a lot of them are some of the more militant straight edge kids. And the reason why, though, is this is what I've been told by some of them who actually are in it, is because, for a lot of kids who choose that sort of lifestyle, it's, you know, the outside view them as, you don't drink, and that's you know, a negative thing, whereas they want to take it as a positive thing, and they choose to do it often through solidarity, through, you know, a brotherhood or whatever you want to call it, of many people who choose that. Now, I didn't get the inside scoop on why they get the matching t-shirts and all that stuff,
but I mean, yeah. What do? They have like a clubhouse?
Is it
like,
actually,
I mean,
you know
like,
what? You, there's
like
one.
A biker gang. Like a biker gang. You got to hang out with the biker gang for a little while. Somebody's got to vouch for you, and you have a clubhouse, and you have like meetings.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Is that what they do?
No. It's nothing like that. And in fact, one of the things, and I'm not making this up, and I'm not going to name the crew by name, but in Richmond there is a very large group of kids that I just described, and they one of the places they hang out at is the gym. They go to the gym and they lift weights. I'm dead serious.
I believe it. I totally believe it.
And then like you've got John. You made me think of this. You said biker gangs. I'm not thinking of like Hell's Angels, but you've got like the Cycle. You know, like the Cutthroats and all of them. You know, I think they started in Richmond, but I know they're very predominant in Philly now as well. They're similar in that nature, but I don't think they have a clubhouse. They just their common thing is they all like to ride bikes together.
So I mean, like these punk gangs, they like call each other up and say, "Let's go see, you know, Agnostic Front on Wednesday or something." Is that what they do?
Now, if it's, I'm sure they organize through Facebook and all that. And if it's local, they probably don't even have to make the call. It's like you know they're going to be there. Now, if they're making a road trip, yeah, there's some organization involved. You know, you got to
and like there's a couple punk gangs in Oakland, and like it's really it's cheesy as hell. Because like I went to see the Cro-Mags. Cro-Mags are awesome, but a couple punk gangs were there, and they all wear like their heavy leather jackets. It was inside a packed club in July in heavy leather jackets. They were dying of heat, and they still wouldn't take them off. It was ridiculous. It was hilarious. But I mean, like, do you get jumped in, or like, I mean, like, what is the purpose of the punk gang, or do they not really have a purpose and they don't know their purpose, and it's more like a circle? Like, you know, I've got a group of friends I hang out with, and you say, well, why do you hang out? Because we're friends. Like, we don't have like an objective to, you know, rent all Highlander the series DVD.
No. Similar. A lot of them are similar to any large group of friends.
Do they have bylaws? That's what my question. Do they have bylaws?
Some of them. I mean, you look at and I don't even want to say their name because you never are supposed to say it out loud. But there's one predominantly in Philadelphia that I think has some pretty strict rules.
There's a punk gang in Philadelphia.
Brian knows who I'm talking about, but we won't say their name.
Gance, is there a punk gang in Philadelphia?
I don't know if I know, honestly.
Is it like two guys? Yes, you and I should start a punk gang.
I mean, what would our bylaws be? Let's hash it out right now.
Yeah, all right, let's do it. Yeah, Chris, you can be in it too. Our bylaws, that you have to have a beard, first of all. You have to wear flannel all the time, you know.
Okay.
You have to ride a bicycle. And let's see. And instead of like beating you up to jump you in, you probably have to like have Mikey Erg drum for your band. That's how you get jumped in.
Okay. That should be easy enough. That's probably the easiest part. I could probably get Mikey Erg to drum for my band before I could grow a beard, honestly.
Oh, so. You can't grow a beard?
No.
Well, it's important that you tried. We're pretty open minded in our punk gang.
Oh, that's good. That's good that seemingly, like most punk gangs, the rules aren't quite as rigid. Because
honestly, I even want girls in our punk gang because I don't want to be hanging around a bunch of dudes. To tell you the truth, I think we should let girls in our punk gang.
Okay, all right. No, I agree. I agree totally.
Let's be the first punk gang that is pro LGBTA. We don't care if you're lesbian, gay, straight, bisexual. Anybody can join our punk gang.
All right. I mean, we're not sounding too menacing, but I mean, we're sounding more like community organizers than a punk gang, honestly.
We wanted to have the big sale instead of beating people down.
bringing the conversation full circle, I'm going to start one that I'm only going to allow transsexuals in. We're going to be called the Jefferson Davises.
Not bad.
Yep.
Nicely done.
It will happen. All right. Well, let's talk about some other shit here. Sam I Am. Yeah. I'm so stoked about this. So many of you out there, I hope, are Sam I Am fans. And if you're not, stop listening to this podcast and go listen to any of their records right now. Anybody who's still around know what a shitty, shitty job was done on their 2006 release, Whatever's Got You Down. The production on it blew. I mean, everything from the cymbal ting, it's crap. The tones are crap. Well, that's going to be fixed. Jeff Dean, who is from, you may know him from The Bomb, Noise by Numbers, All Eyes West, he's actually taken it upon himself to write this tragic wrong and remix, completely remix, not just remastering it. He's not just doing levels on this thing. He's actually going into the masters, and he's going to remix this fucker. So, yeah, get stoked. he took the project on his own, and he's gonna make this thing sound right. Are either of you guys Sam I Am fans?
Yeah, I'm wearing my Sam I Am hoodie right now, actually.
Yeah, and Brian, do you know what I'm talking about with this record?
Yeah, it's a really strange. It's kind of the outlier in Sam I Am's catalog in that. Even going back to their early work, most of it was all like very, very well put together. It was well produced. It wasn't overproduced.
Right.
But the records always sounded really good. And then this one came out, and it's obvious they were intentionally going for a different sound from a production standpoint. But what came out, unfortunately, and it is unfortunate because a lot of the songs in this record are really good, is, you know, the like you said, Chris, like the tones on the record aren't good. The vocals are not good. There needs to be some kinks worked out. And I'm interested to hear it. I mean, I've grown to like a lot of the songs in that record, despite their flaws, or maybe flaws, I guess. But yeah, I'm excited to hear this. And it seems like the band has still signed off on it. It'll be interesting to see if Hopeless has anything to say about it, one way or the other. But yeah, it should be cool. Yeah, no qualms here.
What about you? What about you, Gentilly?
Yeah, I'm actually a huge fan of this band, but I didn't even know this record existed. Like, I've got Initium, I've got Unholy Passion, I've got November Coming Fire. And I love those records, but I thought the band broke
Jesus
up after
Christ,
that.
Christ, stop it. Oh, my God. I can't believe I didn't see that one coming.
No, honestly, I'm not a fan of this band at all. I mean, people like them, that's fine, but it's definitely not my thing.
Yeah.
What's always been amazing about them is they, at least to me, they do not sound like a California band, like, at all.
No. Aren't they from the Bay Area? Is that where are they from?
They're from somewhere in California.
Let me see. Yeah, I'm thinking the Bay Area, but they definitely have a more Midwestern sound, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, they are from the Bay Area. True. I mean, they do sort of have a Midwestern sound, but then if you listen to like Crimpshire, you can sort of hear the connection between the two, you know.
Yeah, I suppose. But this I'm looking forward to this. This record's it's kinda like the Saint Anger of punk. Like, it just sounds like shit. With the difference being that none of the songs on Saint Anger are good, and a bunch of the songs on this record are good, I guess. You know, but at least from a production standpoint.
You know, I honestly think this could significantly change the view of this record, because there are some really good songs on here, but this record has always been sort of a, I almost want to say like a perfect example of what shitty production can do to an album. I mean, everything from where, if you don't have it leveled right, and you know the accents aren't punchy enough at the right times, the song just doesn't have the same effect, and it comes off flat. And it's going to be really interesting to hear what this sounds like when it's done. I would almost say, to me, it's gonna be similar to, I think, the impact that the remastering and remixing of some of the earlier Avail records really had. Maybe even more of an impact. Because those were, you know, nobody ever said, oh, those are just fucking terrible, but they sound fucking amazing with the changes. I think this is just like, this was a like I said earlier, a tragic wrong being righted.
Do you guys think modern records are overproduced? I hear a lot of like punk records, like new ones, and they all sound so overproduced to me.
Well, give me an example. I mean,
give you an example. Yeah. Well, like the new Bad Religion album, or
no,
like the new NoFX album.
No. In fact, John, let me stop you for a second there, because those two records, if anything, I would agree with you maybe on some of, maybe even Process of Belief or some, or you know, Coaster, things like that. But I would specifically argue that the recent Bad Religion and NoFX records actually, if anything, took a step back from that slick production, and if anything, they're a little bit more masterfully produced, where they've taken the time to really, instead of just glossing the thing over, to really accentuate certain pieces of the recording. I mean, the vocals on the new NoFX record are rough, but they sound amazing, and the production on the new Bad Religion, frankly, it reminds me a lot of, you know, their you know, early 90s Epitaph stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
But as far as what we're saying about stuff being overproduced, I don't like overproduction. Now, I got to admit, I was somewhat of a Ryan Green fan. I'm not going to lie. but I'm sorry. I don't – it's the year 2013. There is no reason for anyone to be making shit that sounds like it was recorded in for the label SST back in the 80s.
Yeah, honestly, you're right. SST mid-80s production is atrocious.
Yep.
Like, people like those mid-80s SST records, but the production is so bad. I mean, like, all the songs, like, for almost all the bands, all the songs sound underproduced, the drums sound stale, and it just sounds like it's behind a wall of, like, glass, you know? It's
yeah.
The production is just so bad on those albums, and the wacky thing is like, SST is putting out records again, so production is still terrible. Like, like Greg Ginn just is putting out a new album, and actually people were hating on the song. I forget the name of the song, but it's Greg Ginn and Mike V from the Rats. I actually think Greg Ginn's guitar work is phenomenal. I honestly, it's not Black Flag without Greg Ginn. Greg Ginn is the reason Black Flag is Black Flag, even though he's crazy as hell and everyone hates him. He is one of the greatest guitarists ever. However, that song is terrible because it's underproduced. I mean, not underproduced, but it sounds like crap. The drumming is still stilted, and the lyrics, like all those mid-80s SST records, it sounds like they wrote the lyrics like 2 minutes before they recorded the song. The lyrics are terrible. I don't know how I got off on this tangent, but my point is the production on those mid-80s SST records is terrible. But let me name some of the production records that I love. Spot from Earth AD and Damage, phenomenal production. The first Black Flag EP, Nervous Breakdown, phenomenal production. The Misfits records, the first two Misfits records, phenomenal production. That's the kind of production that I like the best, I think.
One of my favorite examples of not only production, but I think just – it's always been one of my favorite records, but also just probably the best drumming I've ever heard on a punk record altogether, period. Suicide Machines, Destruction by Definition, that production is – fucking flawless. I mean, it's flawless. That is, to me, like, what I love to hear. And I mean, yes, it's very, it is slick, but you know what? I mean, come on. I mean, it's a digital age. It doesn't have to sound drudgy and crappy. And I don't know. I like when you have clean guitars, but not too clean, where it's like, if you can play it live where it sounds like what's recorded, that's fine. I don't like when, you know, auto tuner obviously is garbage, but when you try to clean something up to the point, or you layer too many guitars and you're a fucking three piece, that's when I start getting annoyed.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Yancey. I'm sorry.
I was just gonna say, I think I see what you're saying, Chris, and I see what you're saying, Jen. I think there's something to be said for, you know, the aesthetic of certain bands. And obviously, you know, a good production job will suit this band A, if you will, better than it'll suit this other band over here that, you know, wants a sound that's a little more austere, a little more rustic, a little more retro, if you will. I mean, there's definitely, you know, I think it just depends on the band. I can appreciate both aspects of it. I mean, I think, you know, I ended up enjoying a lot of records in 2012 that would have what most would refer to as not crappy production jobs, in my opinion, but maybe like more retro production jobs, like the Last Ceremony record, for example.
Yeah, yeah, it had a great production. I love that production.
Yeah, I think it sounds awesome, and it's obviously like very tilted towards like how like the classic punk record sounded. Same with the New Toys That Kill record. I mean, that record sounds like it was recorded in a garage, but it sounds amazing because that's what the band was going for, and that's what suits the songs the best. So I don't know. I can appreciate both aspects of it. Just depends on the band and what they're trying to do.
Cool. So anyway,
go ahead, John.
Oh, I was just gonna say
segue us.
I was gonna segue us, and I was saying, talking about people not agreeing with certain exteriors. as I'm sure you guys know, currently there's a venue called Rocket Town in Tennessee, I think, and they fired a fellow named Ryan Breedwell who's wearing a shirt by the band Hostage Calm. What the shirt said is, "I support same-sex marriage." The venue, which is it's like a youth center, but they have a lot of music there. It's owned by it's like a Christian organization, and they fired them. And in their explanation for firing, they said, You cannot wear a shirt to work on an office day or a show day supporting same-sex marriage. A lot of people had a lot of questions about this. What do you guys think about this?
See, this is interesting because my gut reaction is to side with the guy because obviously, you know, I support the same cause that he is supporting by wearing that shirt and I want to side with him. But at the same time, you know, obviously there's the whole business aspect of it where, you know, Rocket Town, it's a nonprofit center, but really they can fire anybody they want for really any reason, as long as it's not based on like age, gender, sexual orientation, religion, and on and on and on. You know, I forget what the name of the act is, but I'm sure you know, John. But the other thing that kind of irks me about this, and I was talking to our copy editor, Amelia, about it today because she lives in Tennessee and she's been to the venue a bunch of times, and I was trying to get some research like to kind of see like what this place is all about. And she mentioned to me that it seemed strange that this guy worked there for 7 years and only now this is kind of like coming out and he got fired. But the way the statement reads, and I could be misconstruing it, it seems like he was mistreated this whole time he worked there. And like 7 years is a really long time to work at a job that you don't like and then you're being mistreated at. Now, I understand that, you know, circumstances might precipitate that you need to have that job for whatever reason. You have bills to pay, whatever it might be. I don't know this guy's personal circumstances. But that part of it is a little strange to me. Maybe I'm wrong to think that. Obviously, you know, it's I guess it's cool that, you know, all these bands are coming out in support of this guy and they're coming out in, you know, in opposition to the venue, vowing to never play there, canceling their shows there, all that stuff. But that part about the guy working there for 7 years and then, you know, for whatever reason, staying there, even though seemingly what that venue is about goes against his personal beliefs, is a little odd to me. And I don't know. I'm not really sure that we know the entire story just yet, is what I'm trying to say. There could be something else at play here that we don't know about.
Brian, you're being awfully coy. Did you get some information that you're not allowed to share with us?
No, not at all. That's everything that I learned in my research today.
Here's the thing. I agree with what you're saying, Brian, and we don't know the whole thing. And obviously, you know, it's a business and all that. I agree with also, you know, the stance here. I support the same causes. Here's my take on it. You know the people you're working for, okay? That's no shocker here. Is this behavior on their part to fire him warranted? I don't know. John's the legal guy. He could probably make a judgment call on that. But regardless, I kind of like the fact that the guy is even though the venue, church, whatever the fuck they legally are, I like the fact that he's basically calling them out for being dicks, even though they have every right to do that. They may, and again, John may be able to clarify, but they may be protected in being able to do that based on their religious beliefs and yada, yada, yada. Personally, I think it's kind of cool that he's calling them out on it. Even if he's not, you know, he may not have the ability to sue them or any of that shit. I just think it's kind of neat that he took that and ran with it. Whether it was staged, whether he knew that was going to happen, whether he'd been warned, I don't know. But yeah. He's calling somebody out. It goes back to kind of the old saying, you know, don't do anything that you're not proud to have somebody call you on. I don't know, John. I'm going to pass it off to you because you can probably give us some better insight into this whole scenario from a legal perspective, even though you were speaking your own opinion and in no way legally represent punknews.org.
Yeah, I don't legally represent anybody. But the point is constitutionally, that is on the federal level. You can fire someone for any reason or no reason, just not a bad reason. The five bad reasons are as following: sex, age, nationality, religion, and sex, age, nationality, religion, and I'm missing one. Sex, age, nationality, religion. I put it in the. Hold on a second. Let me look this up. I'm forgetting it. Oh, here we go. Gender, age, nationality, race, or religion. That's it. So they can fire you for any reason except for that. So I think the venue would argue that they're firing him not for religion, but because of political statement, what you can do. But honestly, like if he worked for this place, I agree with Yancey completely. Like, if he worked there for 7 years, like, he's got to know what they're thinking. And if he didn't like working there for 7 years, why is he there? I doubt working there he's making big bank, so he could probably get a job almost anywhere else and make about the same amount of money. And although people might find this frustrating, I can certainly understand that. I think it's a necessary evil, and here's why. Let's say you can't fire people for, you know, making a political statement. Okay, well, what's then? Are we going to grant people a fundamental right to have free speech in a private area? We've never ever done that before. You see, free speech is only protected by governmental influence, not private influence. And so, if you want to say people can make whatever political statement they want or whatever religious statement they want in a private enterprise, that probably violates the constitutionality. Well, that's probably unconstitutional as well because. Well, yeah, I don't know the exact reason why. But anyway, my point being is that we've never granted free speech to private parties ever. So yeah. Why would we do it here, you know? And if you do grant free speech, does that mean you could go into, like, your employer and say, you know, and start swinging around aborted babies, you know, and say, I'm just exercising my free speech. You shouldn't get abortion. Look at this picture of this dead baby. You, like, from the other standpoint, like, let's say you got a job at, I don't know, what's a business everybody likes? Pete's Coffee, right? Everybody likes that company, right? Or Whole Foods. Does everyone like that company? I don't even know.
There you go.
But like, let's say you walked in and you've got like a dead baby on your shirt and you say, this is what abortion says. Well, then if we want to let this guy say, I support same-sex marriage, which is a political opinion, you have to let the other guy have the chopped up baby on his shirt. You know what I'm saying? And, it's – why should we be – there's no reason to grant those rights to private parties is my argument. And I'm just going to say one last thing is on the Punk News website, on this article, we have what he claims, and I shouldn't – well, it makes me sound like I'm suspicious, but I'm a little suspicious. He claims it's his dismissal thing, and that's where I read why he got fired from. But if you look at the very bottom, it says, by signing this, I'm acknowledging and understanding the above comments, and I will work to improve the behaviors identified in the employee discipline notice. So that suggests he wasn't fired because of the shirt, you know. It just says he got yelled at. Maybe he quit or something. I don't know. We don't know right now. Hopefully we'll find out in the future. So I'm just saying, as Yancey said, we don't have all the facts here. So right now, even though the venue sounds like a kind of a bunch of jerks, from a legal standpoint and I guess from a logical standpoint, I got to side with them with the facts I have in front of me right now. Yeah. With that, talking about dead babies.
John, you made a good point real quick. I know you want to. We're going to jump into a song here, but real quick, it just made me kind of think of something here, and it makes perfect sense. You know, it's the same thing, kind of like with school. I'm sure most of us probably at some point in high school or what have you wore a shirt to school that had something on it you weren't allowed to wear on it, and you had to either turn it inside out or you got sent home.
That's different because school's governmental.
Well, You're still not allowed free speech in school, though.
It depends. It depends what kind of speech you're exercising. See, with regards to government, there's three levels of free speech that there's three levels of scrutiny to free speech: strict, uh-huh. intermediate, and rational. And with school and school students, it's a special case because it is school. And the answer is you're not granted unlimited free speech in school, but you're never granted unlimited free speech anywhere, even from governmental influence. That's what people understand. Like, I can't go into the airport and yell bomb, bomb, bomb and say it's free speech because it might be speech, but it's not protected speech, you know. So
So basically, as long as it doesn't disrupt others in any way, it's allowable, which I guess is kind of what schools always use to ban or not allow certain T-shirts because they could be viewed as disruptive.
Right. There's actually a line of cases about that in front of the Supreme Court from the 2000s and late 90s with regards to gang colors and that kind of a thing. And basically, I think the rule is rational basis, meaning so long as the government can produce a rational basis for why they're making this rule, it's constitutional. So the rational basis is if you can't wear any shirt you want, it means people can't identify who's in the gang, and therefore there will be less violence in the school. That's probably a rational basis, and that probably passes and is constitutional. By contrast, let's say I don't know. The courthouse says you can't wear heavy metal t-shirts into the courthouse. Well, that's going to be unconstitutional because there's no rational basis as to why you should be able to wear a heavy metal t-shirt into the courthouse. But actually, I'm getting off track. So, I mean, that's that. You know? So anyways, speaking of dead babies on shirts at Whole Foods, I'm going to play a track from a brand new band. I actually just found out about this band a couple weeks ago. They're called Grave Babies. And I got to say, the name's a little cheesy. It kind of makes them sound like one of these Falling in Reverse Time bands, but they're not at all. They're actually kind of like one-third punk, one-third garage, one-third goth. It's almost like halfway between bands like No Bunny and The Spits and like Bauhaus and like Rudimentary Peni. Like really heavy goth, but it rocks and has actually like really bad production like we were talking about earlier, but it sounds so good and it's pretty scary. So this is a track by the band called Grave Babies. They got a new album coming out in February. I think it's February 23rd. The track is called Over and Under Ground.
That's going to do it for this week's Punk News Podcast. Again, want to thank John and Brian for joining us on the roundtable. We also want to thank the bands and their respective labels for contributing music to this week's podcast, including Grave Babies, The Ambulers, and Snuff. We also want to thank Nerman, our ultra sexy sound guy, for making this thing sound, well, ultra sexy. And we also want to thank Scotty from Death to False Hope for giving us some theme music to make it sound somewhat professional. So, again, thanks again. That's it. If you want to provide some feedback to the show, hit us up via email, podcast@punknews.org. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, other social media sites, and, of course, under the comment section of the story when it gets posted.
That'll do it again for this week. We appreciate you listening and hope to have you back.